Stock Eliminator to the lanes. We need Stock Eliminator to the lanes.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Introducing your host, RaceToolsDirect.com's own Aaron Allison and the Cobra Jet flying Charlie Downing, better known as Chuck.
This podcast is proudly presented by Race Tools Direct, your source for all of your racing tools and equipment needs. Visit racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533 to order today.
Welcome to the Class Racing Podcast number 10 with Charlie, and this week we have the famous PJ Norris.
I don't know about famous, but I'll take infamous.
PJ the DJ!
Welcome. Like a Chuck D party.
That's right. We may not win too many rounds, but we'll have a good time.
That's what it's all about.
Well, thanks for joining us this week, PJ. Looking forward to talking a little about racing. I know you got a new car you're building. And also want a little update on the music biz and the Nashville scene. So it should be a fun time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So here in the Midwest, the spring is finally sprung, so to speak. I mowed my grass for the first time this week. How about Michigan, Charlie?
Yep, I had to roll my grass. We got 2 inches of rain Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So pulled the grass, cut it, did a little weed whipping, moved some farm equipment around so we could get some stuff ready to plant here next month and go to work every day. That's the name of the game.
Man, rolling your grass, Charlie, it sounds like a pristine lawn you got there.
No, not pristine lawn. I have a bunch of asshole moles. And man, I have to roll my lawn all the time. Like, I have mole traps and, you know, the guy comes out and does all this and that, and it doesn't work. About the only thing that works is a pitchfork when you can see them. So they just, I got like a sandy, I don't know what you'd call it, but it's more sand than clay for my yard. And the moles and chipmunks, man, they just tear it up, it seems like. So it looks like a underground tunnel right now until I rolled it yesterday.
Nice. So, Charlie, I got to give you some crap. So, you know, last week we took a week off, and the week before we had Tom Russell as the guest host. But I don't know if you saw it, but in Las Vegas, my pick was the big winner.
I did see that. You know, Anthony's always a threat. Hard to believe he won another national event. It's like, what, 23, 24, 25, something like that, plus about 100 IHRA wins.
At least.
So, I mean, that guy is just, he's killer, especially when he gets on a roll. I mean, I remember years where he won, I don't know, 3 out of the first 4 points meets right out of the box, and then he just parked the stuff till the fall and came right back out and, you know, I think he, I don't know if he ended up winning the world championship that year, but he came damn close and he really didn't even try that much. You know, I think he had 2 or 3 races left to claim and he just didn't go.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I think, you know, Anthony is, if you notice, he's always really aggressive on the tree. And if he loses, a lot of times he'll be because he's red. But if he's green, it's usually O or teen. I mean, he doesn't back off. He goes after it. I mean, you know, some of the other top racers, like a Dan Fletcher, I think, you know, they try to be 20, 25, and, you know, I think they have their, you know, the other end figured out. They've got their Cardal, spot drop, different games they kind of play. But Anthony, man, he just crushes the tree all the time. And
yeah, I mean, that's one thing I'll say about Anthony. You know, you watch some of these guys, you know, they're good drivers. You know, Dan, you know, a couple others, and they'll be, you know, 50 or 60 every now and then. But it seems like, you know, the rounds that Anthony loses, he's, you know, 002 red or 001 or 006. I mean, it was a couple years ago we were, I can't remember if it was Charlotte or Gainesville or some, maybe Atlanta. And he ran a guy that doesn't race that much, you know, probably a guy that you should probably set up to be 30 on. And he goes up there and just drills the tree and is like 004 red, and the guy he races is like 220 or something, and I remember somebody asking, you know, well, why'd you mow the tree over against that guy? I mean, he hadn't been better than, you know, 150 all the time. And Anthony's answer was, you know, it's just not how I race, man. I go up there and hit it every time, and, you know, that's why he's a world champ multiple times. And I think Shitty's probably won in six or seven categories. I know he's won in top dragster, superstock, stock. I don't know if he won in comp. I think he did win in comp when he was driving Vinny's car for a little bit, that Roadster maybe. But, I mean, he's one of those guys, you put him in any car, and he's a threat, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, we got the Charlotte National event coming up this weekend. So I will give yourself and PJ, we'll get PJ involved in this.
Yeah, I want to make these picks.
So you can think about it, but come to the end of before the end of the show, we'll do some picks for Charlotte and see if we can't keep this streak alive a little bit. And by the way, me and Tom did terrible at Houston. I think we all lost the first round.
Yeah, who did you pick in Houston? I'm just curious. I don't remember.
Man, I don't remember.
Man, was that good?
I picked Jeff Heffler in Superstock. I think he was a round one runner-up. And
yeah,
I picked
he was first round out.
And I picked Lopez in stock, and I think same deal for him.
He's never pretty tough down there. Those guys are from Texas. So
I know.
Those are good picks, I think.
Let's see, Tom picked Stan Holt because he loves the stick shift 66.
Well, I can't argue with his logic. I mean, it's one of the nicer Novas out there. It's a beautiful car, and, you know, there's no shortage of coin spent on it.
And I think in stock he picked, I get him confused, but one of your Emmons brothers that was running the 69 Camaro.
It must have been Jerry, because I think he was the only one running stock. The other two were stuck in super stock, I think.
Yeah, and I don't think any of them
I think he got beat heads up by Brenda, I think, third round, which I was kind of surprised by that, because their cars are normally, they run pretty strong, and he's been struggling with that new combination this year. He got beat heads up at by, I think, Hagen Gary or Gary, one of them guys with the old Fred Henson Challenger at the points meet there the week before that. So he had two races in a row. He got cracked heads up, I think. So,
oh, nice.
Kind of a bummer because those guys, you know, that car normally, I think he won a heads up against Larry Hill in the semis at Indy last year or the year before. I can't remember. So, I mean, he's normally a pretty good player in A&B.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's get going on here. We got a lot of races to talk about this week, and then we want to spend plenty of time talking to PJ here at the end. Should be really interesting. Kind of get an update from him on all things racing, music, Nashville, announcing. Anything else you want to talk about?
He's been quiet the last 6 months, man. I haven't heard too much out of him.
Well, he's married now. You know what? A year anniversary,
right.
I saw.
I've been plotting. Don't you worry, Chuck D. I'm coming back to D3 for you.
Oh, well, too bad I'm not racing in D3.
Another Southern plant to back to D3. I like it.
Yeah, I would definitely run Superstock in D3. It's pretty easy up there from what everybody tells me.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know what I'm going to do. When we talk about the car, I'll tell you my game plan. Maybe I'll run D6 or something. Or, I don't know.
I tell you what, if it wasn't for the travel, that's a division I would run. 14 cars in every race. You know, you get the same points as the guys that win 6 and 7 rounds everywhere. It's definitely a better deal.
Yeah, plus
fired at D6. Ouch.
Oh. Plus you get to go to some cool new places, you know?
Hey, the truth hurts, PJ. That's all I'm going to say.
I know that's right.
All right, Chuck D., I'll give you one chance here. I got all our notes here. The Chuck D. rumor mill. Since you've been off for a couple of weeks, you got to have a good rumor for us.
Man, it's been pretty quiet. I have not heard a whole lot of anything. They tore down some cars at that Houston points meet, or Dallas, whichever. I can't remember which one it was. Oh, it was a Dallas points meet. They threw out a stocker. I can't remember who it was. Had an incorrect intake part number. Something NHRA took an intake away from some guys over the winter. They didn't realize it. They randomly tore down a girl in Superstock. I can't remember her name. And they pitched three or four guys that won first round that had illegal ballast in the trunk. It wasn't bolted down. Some clown had a trailer tire scratched in the trunk of their car, supposedly. Just ratchet strapped in there, you know, which is a big no-no. The wheel at least has to fit the car. I think most guys that run stock and super stock know that, but, you know, you'll have that from time to time. So, as far as rumors, I haven't heard anything, man. Man, it's been pretty quiet. You know, it just started warming up here. Nothing. I haven't heard any good stories. You know, nobody building anything crazy or, you know, NHRA's. Oh, in Division III, we had an increase in entry fee, but no increase in payouts. I saw I got my new dragster for the Plumas Points meet, and I see it went from 160 to 170 with no increase in payout. So that was a nice bonus for us there in Division III. So.
There you go, PJ. That's you, D3.
I'm unbiased when it comes to the decision making on that. I'm out on that deal. I just, you know, I don't want to and then me randomly get tore down. You know what I'm saying? So I'd like to keep my cars together because I wouldn't be able to put them back together. So I'm gonna try to stay out of that one.
Well, the good thing, PJ,
you know that's one of the things though that. You know, the class is really founded on, you know, I know it's going back way in time, you know, almost most of those guys have either retired or passed on, but, you know, they used to only let 48 cars into the Eliminator. I mean, everybody that was in the Eliminator tore down, you know, at every points meet in the 80s, you know, if you wanted to run it up, you know, at the end of the race, they tore you down. And there was a lot of times that both the winner and runner-up would get tore down, and they'd both fail. You know, and there would either be, if there was one semifinalist, he would be declared the winner. And if there were two semifinalists, there was no winner for the event.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The first time I went to Chicago, the very first year, right, that I was running stock full time, I went to Chicago and I was going through tech. And the dude's like, well, you don't have a hood emblem on the front of this thing. I just changed the header panel, right? And I was like, oh, well, they don't make them anymore. He's like, and the dude's like, man, 10 years ago, we'd have thrown you out. I was like, well, thank God it's not 10 years ago because I couldn't find one. So I don't know what to do. I was like, do you want to throw me out here or where are we at? But, you know, it's one of those things where the game has changed so much. You know, some of the stuff doesn't surprise me. I would be interested to have tried something like that, right, where you get tore down if you win or there's a few things that I see that, again, I'm not interested in it now, but I'm interested in the thought of it, right? I don't want to have to – I don't own that many head gaskets, so I wouldn't be able to take my stuff apart. I'd be like, well, I guess this is it for me, fella.
Yeah.
I know when Collins was running Division II, they had a deal where if you won the points meet, you had to show up at the next race apart.
That's a pretty cool rule.
So, but really,
blazing my stuff apart.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of didn't make a whole lot of sense to me because anybody that won a race, you know, if you were illegal, you come to the next race, you're sure as hell not going to bring that same engine or whatever it is back and tear it apart and go through tech. You're going to change your shit, you know? I mean, the whole logic behind it really didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Right.
But, you know, I think like we've talked on the podcast here for a few weeks. I mean, I think, you know, it's a fine line. I think NHRA, as I will applaud them, they've done a pretty good job. There's definitely been some teardowns this year. It seems like, you know, more than in the last couple of years. And, you know, I think a little tech is good. You know, I think, could you go overboard? Do we need to tear down everybody? No. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a hobby that we do this for fun. You don't want to run people off. But there's got to be enough tear down to make sure everybody's legal, you know. So it seems like they're going in that direction. And, you know, I know the past few years it kind of got to the point where they weren't really tearing anybody down at all. And I don't think that's good for the sport. So, you know, let's just kind of let it play out and see how it goes. But I'm one that is at least a little bit excited that at the first few races of the year, there's been some teardowns. There's been some people that have been caught with some stuff. You know, it doesn't seem like anybody's gotten caught with anything blatant, you know, too bad. But, you know, some stuff that, you know, is illegal. So,
yeah, I agree. Like I said, when it works, it's great, right? You know, to a certain extent. I don't want them tearing everybody down, but to a certain extent, right? Random is good. And if you want to see something that makes sense, you know, I'm all for that, trying to abide by the rules, you know, more.
And I'm all for the safety stuff. You know, they should definitely, I think, do some more on that. And sometimes, you know, because at the end of the day, it's, you know, cars are going faster and faster. You know, there's stalkers going 7 seconds per se, right? So, I'm all about the safety, and especially as I've gotten older and had kids and stuff, that seems a little bit more important than it did, you know, when I first started. So, you know, but we'll see. Time will tell. I think they're doing a good job, and, you know, can we always do better? Absolutely. But, hey, PJ, for you, good note here. Modified motors, you usually just pump them, so you're good.
Yeah, that's what someone was telling me. I was like, thank God. That'd be great.
Yeah, very, very rarely head gasket come off a modified motor, so you should be in good shape there. All right, well let's talk about some races. We got a bunch of races over the last 2 weeks, so we'll try to go through them kind of quick here. Obviously, everybody on the podcast can go on Drag Race Central or NHRA and kind of look at the results, but I just wanted to, you know, kind of give some people some praise and also talk about, you know, some of the little things that happened. But Houston National, let's start with Houston National. Pretty short fields there at the Houston Nationals, guys. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I wish we could run some 5-round super stock and stock races. I'd have about, I don't know, 7 or 8 Wallys on the shelf if that was the case here in Division III. But, you know, it is what it is. Well, you can't blame them guys, you know, but it's tough. You know, it goes back to the points deal. I mean, you got guys winning 5- and 6-round races and getting, you know, 95 to 105 points for them. And the same guys that go to Division I, Division III, you know, maybe some Division II stuff. And you got 7-round races getting the same points. I mean, just, you know, that's the only problem I got with it. So.
Yeah, you know, the Houston's a tough one, right? Because it's like, that was a national, so it was, it was pre-capped, right? So there was, what, 50 was the entry, right?
Yeah, but they didn't even get to the cap in either class, I don't believe.
Oh, so that, yeah. So I did see that, as I watched the rounds go down, I saw that it was 5 rounds for Superstock, which I thought was definitely short. I was like, that seems odd. But Houston's tough, right? I mean, it's down there in the, I mean, corner.
744 South, yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough race to get, but you would think being a national that they would definitely hit that cap, but I agree with Chuck. Man, that's tough. Even the playing field, right, because those don't have as many racers, right, it's a double-edged sword. It evens the playing field for Division 6, Division 4 and 5, where they may not get, you know, all, you know, the same amount of cars, whereas Division 3 and 1 and possibly 2 get the majority of those fields are huge, right? I mean, Bowling Green is even on their early stuff, the open in a couple of weeks will be, you know, 95, 100 cars deep. Right, minimum for a divisional type thing. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, right? It's nice that it evens the field out if you're out there and because you can't race as many races, right? Maybe instead of evening the points, maybe they say, hey, you get an extra claim because we're not going to give you the same points for winning a 5-round race where somebody over here had to win a 7- or 8-round race. I don't know, right? That's definitely a question as we move into a different decade, right? And that's the thing, it's ever-changing in class racing especially, so. I don't know. That's my hot take on that one.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, PJ. I've never really heard somebody make that suggestion, you know, an extra claim or something like that. Let's think about that a little bit. But and there was, by the way, I looked it up, there was 31 Superstock cars entered for Houston. I don't know what ended up being on the qualifying sheet, but I know stock was in the 40s, so.
Yeah, you know, Houston, there's a lot of guys that have a bad taste in their mouth from 3-4 years ago. When they showed up there and they ran first round and the guys that won, they said, well, this race just never happened. And the guys that lost basically got another claimer because the race never happened. So there's a lot of people that, you know, they just won't go back to that place, you know, because of weather. And it always seems to rain there. And a lot of times when they have finished it, they finished it on Monday. I don't think the parking situation is really that great at that event for sportsmen. So I know a lot of people just, they kind of write that race off just because of weather and the way they've been treated in the past there.
Yeah. I'll tell you what though, for having a short field in Superstock, Did you guys see that final? I mean, it was crazy. The Christian, he was 000 in the final, runs 2 above his Dow, so he's basically a 200th total package, and he is in the way.
Yeah, I mean, Pete Perry was it's one of them things. I mean, the last probably 18 months, Pete Perry's just been on fire. I mean, the guy won the division last year. He's won a ton of rounds. I mean, he was averaging a 005 in the third, fourth, and fifth. And I think he had an 05, a 10, a 2. I mean, he's just, for a guy that's, you know, his age, to just go up there and just mow the tree like that, it's really amazing, you know.
You know,
especially after working on the Edmonton's cars all day long, because, I mean, he's basically the head mechanic at Emmons Motorsports during the weekend.
You know, I talked to Emmons, I talked to Jerry as I first got this modified. When I first got the Sunfire, my plan was I'm trying to figure out a motor combo, right? I looked at the SB2 deal because that's really what I wanted to run. And then I talked to Jerry, and he was like, yo, Pete's got this FGT motor. He's like, that may be an option for you. And I, you know, got to learn a little bit of that deal. And I was like, man, if I had the money right there, that setup that they have, 9.0s, 19s, with that motor, keep it together. I mean, that's a bad hot rod right there. And then he throws 20 total at you, and he's still got 2,000 to work with in super stock.
Oh, yeah.
It's out. He's got – that hot rod he has, and like you said, man, just the past few races, like you said, he won the division. He's probably the guy to beat, right? I mean, in D4 right now, he is running the table. Again, it seems like he's off to a hot start for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And do you know if he blocks, Charlie?
I don't believe so. I think he's gone. He did for a little while, went away from it. I know one of the big things that's really helped him, just with talking with the boys and Kyle a little bit, he was one of those old school guys, once again, just always was tinkering with that Calais and the Sunfire they had and trying to make stuff go faster, you know, always trying to find that extra 200-300. And about 2 years ago, Kyle finally talked him into just, you know, concentrate more on your driving, you know. Who cares if the car is 200 slower here than, you know, what it was, and you could change this jet or you could do this or put this converter in or this gear. You know, just concentrate on driving the thing. And really overnight, when he quit tinkering and just left the thing alone, he was a terror, you know, and has been.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely been the guy to beat. In stock, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Jay Pitt won, and he's been pretty tough over the last couple of years down in D4 as well.
Yeah, he runs that Barracuda that I think he had bought it from Steve Wong. They flipped from a 383 to a 440 back and forth a couple of times. You know, drove pretty average. I think he won a points meet earlier in the year already. You know, drove decent then. He had a couple 40s. You know, he got by Buckner. You know, Buckner broke out too much against him third round. You know, he had Brenda. You know, Brenda had a little better light and took too much stripe. You know, but after he kind of got by those two, where, you know, it looks like they just hogged it up against him, you know, got it back in the low 20s and got it done. You know, he was never really, other than the fifth round, he was behind on the tree, you know, every round for the most part by a little bit. Even in the final, he was 21. I think Candy's was 20, or maybe Candy's was 28. I guess he did have the light in the final by a little bit.
You know, Jacob Pitt. I'm friends with him on Facebook. We kind of catch up a little bit here and there. We were team race back teammates a few years back, either last year or the year before. And you know, he's definitely got his hot rods together too, man. That Barracuda is you know, he makes a lot of good runs and works on that thing. And I know he won class. I believe he won class at the National too. You know, in C or whatever, I believe that 440 runs. But, you know, he's got he's definitely been doing it a long time, and I think he just switched to the one car now. I think he sold his other Super Stocker. So, you know, sometimes that focus, I'm the opposite, right? I got to have two cars to take my mind off stuff. You know, some of those guys kind of zero in when they get down to one car. But him and Brett Candy, the margin of victory is 6,000 at the finish line. So, I mean, that's a drag race right there. The final of Super Stock is 2,000, and the final of Stock is 6,000 at the Stripe.
Yeah, definitely don't get any better than that. All right, so let's move on to the Atlanta doubleheader. So they had the points meet first, and then they were going to try to do the 8th mile open, right?
Yeah, I think they canceled the open. They told those guys they could pay their $125 and keep the grading point, or they'd give them their money back. So a lot of guys are pretty happy that they could pay $125, get a grading point, and not have to waste another day.
I tell you, Rich Schaefer, one of the best division directors I've ever had interaction with, you know, making good decisions as far as like racer economics go. Like, he doesn't control how much people pay and all that stuff, but he does a great job to keep the racer in mind when he makes those decisions, you know, things like that. And I think he's done a fantastic job. I'm interested to see the new guy at D3 is a buddy of mine as well. We've caught, you know, he was running Atlanta up until, you know, for a while he ran Kilcare and some other places. So I'm interested to see what they do, you know, in D3, because like I said, he's run a lot of different racers, so I'm sure that's interested to see that. But to the doubleheader fact, I think that's a great point. You know, pay $120, get my grading point, I'm going to go to a race anyway. If I need the grading point, you know, you may take it, right? Because the majority of them, I'm sure, were racing both to begin with, right? So.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, having the two races one weekend and doing the real points meet first, you know, I think was a pretty good plan. I mean, if the weather's good, we get to race twice, and I think that's a great plan. You know, one trip. They usually don't get a crazy car count down there at that, you know, at the Atlanta race for sure. So, you know, I think it's a good plan. I would agree with you. When I've raced Division II, chasing some points the last couple of years at the end of the year, I've always had a lot of fun down there. Those guys run a pretty good ship. They're not scared to, you know, change or alter the schedule around weather. And, you know, I think it helps the, you know, the racer that's got to work, it's got to be home on Monday, you know, that sort of thing. So, had a pretty good experience.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say about Rich, man, is he's not afraid to use common sense. You know, some of these directors, you know, they go by whatever schedule they've got, and they don't change or for whatever reason. But Rich, I mean, he's 100% the real deal. I mean, he'll change something on the fly, you know, this or that weather. I mean, I've been to a couple of Division II points meets, and Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, he's like, yeah, no time trials. We're getting right into eliminations because it's going to rain tomorrow. You know, or I've been to other points meets, and it looks like it's going to rain Sunday, and they're like, well, you know, we got to get qualifying in, and, you know, we'll play tomorrow by ear. And then it ends up getting rained out, and you got to come back, you know, and waste another weekend to finish a race that you could have finished on Saturday there, you know. So, yeah, you know, Rich is just, he's really good at making calls and putting the racer first.
Yeah, and I agree. I thought Jeff Conley did a really good job of that the last couple of years. Was kind of sad that he was moving on. And look forward to the new guy, see how he kind of acts and interacts in Division III.
Yeah, I mean, that's one good thing the new guy's going to have, you know, is Jeff's right there in the office too. So, I mean, any questions, he can, you know, walk 20 feet down the hall, and there's Jeff, who was doing it for 2 years and did a great job at it. So,
yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's get back to the racing part. In Superstock, we had Emily Volkman, who I believe this was her first NCAA divisional win. I saw on Facebook, and couldn't meet a nicer family. They got the big win over David Rampe.
Yeah, I mean, nothing. I'm looking at it now, nothing really jumping out except for third round. You know, she was 8,000 pack against Schechter, but, you know, 76 first round, 37, 20 red, 41, and then normally 65 in the final is not going to get it done against Rampe, but I'm guessing it was dark because Rampe was on top of it, and all of a sudden he goes 93. So
I'm glad you called that, because that would have been the only thing I saw. It looked like it must have turned nighttime there.
Yeah, I would
agree. You know, Rampe's one of those guys like myself, you know, when it turns dark, you know, just get the dartboard out and we'll throw at it, because that's about what it's going to be for me. So.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure Emily used blocks or used the blinder, and I know Rampe for sure used the blinder. So, you know, that would be my guess. I know Emily, looking throughout the elimination, she looked like her car was dialed in. You know, I know they've done a lot of changes to that car over the last couple of years. I mean, she ran within 100th, you know, four or five times out of the last six rounds. So definitely had it dialed in. And Randy, I mean, you know, he's always tough. He's always solid.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see Emily win. You know, I know Larry and those guys have worked hard for a lot of years on them cars, you know. So it's good to see them guys have some success with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in stock, no stranger to the winner's circle, Jeff Strickland with the new Copo Camaro took out Daniel Young. And I'm not sure how many wins this is for Jeff, but it's a lot. And he got two of them this weekend with the double up in Top Dragster as well.
Yeah, you give Strick 600 on the tree, and you might as well just shut her down at 60-foot cone because it's over. So, as
it's
you can see here,
like,
you know.
It's almost like he doesn't win. If he doesn't win both, he doesn't win any. It's like you have to win twice in the weekend to make it worth his time and effort.
I bet he's doubled up at probably 5 or 6 points meets, and I know at least 2 national events.
It's just unbelievable that they talked about, you know, the amount of double ups until I moved to Tennessee 4 years ago. And then at that point, the amount of double ups, there were like 4 or so. It was something small, right? It was not a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, it was like JT, Scotty, Edmund, Peter.
Right.
You know.
Very few. And now there's been Strick. There's been Lamb.
Nick Folk did it.
Exactly. It's like there's been more in the past 3 years than there's been in all 60 years of drag racing, it seems like. It's been quite unbelievable. I feel like that's one of the feats that is under the radar. Like, man, this has happened a lot more than it should.
Yeah, well, and not only winning races, I mean, Jeff doubled up a few years back the world championship. And then Justin did the exact next year. Same deal.
That's the part that, to me, is the most – you're witnessing the greatest era of driving, like, you know, car building and driving together that you'll ever, right? The races are closer than they've ever been. The equipment's better than it's ever been, right? I have this conversation with my father-in-law all the time. It's like the equipment now that you can get, there's no reason for people to cheat because anything you want to buy, you can buy it. You can make your car as good as you want to make it within the rules, right? I mean, look at Strick, right? He's 005 and goes 6 above on only 4 mph faster, guaranteed he's on the rip from, what, 1,000 foot on probably? He caught Daniel.
At least, yep.
You know what I'm saying? So he's probably set up to go 41 or 42. He likes to set up a little bit hot in the faster car. So, I mean, it's unbelievable. And his runs are just – it's unbelievable to me. It's the craziest thing.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like he almost gave this thing back. I was looking at it, and he only took a foot at the finish line, and it just over. Looks like he was screwing around and almost gave it back.
I don't know how I don't even know how you see out of those Camaros. I'm interested to see Aaron's take with his new car because I've sat in one of those and the visibility level is so tiny. I mean, the window's like a foot tall max.
Yeah. It's just sitting in the garage. It'll be interesting to see. I'm glad that my car should hopefully be fairly fast because I don't think you want to do too much looking back, that's for sure. Because it's bad enough out the front. I think out the back, it'd be almost darn near impossible. I think that wraps up the Atlanta. The second race got canceled, but it looked like a pretty good showing. I know they had some weather issues down there. But, you know, we got Emily first win over Rampy. And we'll talk about David just a little bit later in the points chase. But he's got off to another pretty good start this year in the points. So, you know, he always says, I've talked to him, oh, I try not to chase the world and not going to get all the races, but last couple of years, it seems like by about May, he's fully committed for the year. So it's good to see David still out there kicking butt. All right, so the last race that we had, there was a points meet at the Las Vegas Speedway. And, you know, they had three big races at Las Vegas the last 3 weeks. So they had the national event, which we talked about with Tom, before last, and then last weekend they had the Las Vegas Divisional, and then, or 2 weekends ago, and then last weekend they had the, you know, one of the biggest bracket races of the year that Peter Biondo and Kyle Stipel put on, but the Spring Fling Million, was last week. So, man, I mean, Las Vegas was the place to be last couple of weeks racing-wise.
Yeah, it happened in place.
So, Charlie, why don't you go through the divisional results for us here?
So we got Larry Zavala over Dave Kelly in Superstock. You know, Larry was 60s first three rounds. Looks like he had the heads up against Fletcher second round. Best line of the day was a 29 against Kirby, and was 60 in the final and three above over Dave's 46 and eight above. So, you know, really no stellar driving whatsoever. You know, heads up a bye run, bunch of 60s. I mean, normally that's not getting the job done, but it's Vegas, baby, you know. So when you got the luck, you got the luck. That's all we can say on that one. Moving into stock, we got Brad Burton, who just basically broke it off, and little Jimmy gave him no room whatsoever. 15, dead on, trip zip. Little Jimmy picked a really bad time. They had his worst light of the day, which was a 37, but even if he was 20, he still wasn't getting the job done. So, Jimmy's driving good. He was in the 20s, high teens all weekend. He really had some tough competition when you look back and see who Jimmy had to rein in. It was only first round. He had Don Keene, a past, you know, division champ. Ryan McClanahan, who's always tough. Mick Halley's another, you know, national event winner. And then Keebor in the sixth round. So, I mean, Jimmy really had zero easy rounds. And he had Brad Burton in the final. I mean, that's a pretty tough road to hoe. You know, Brad drove good. He was 40, 30, you know. He, you know, was decent on the tree, nothing killer until the final. And then he stepped his game up when he needed to. So, you know, hats off to him and Uncle Nasty on that. So I know they were sticking around for the spring fling. So good to see those guys get a little success before that deal started.
I just want to note two things. That they both had to run a heads up at one point, and Burton had to do it before the final. So,
yeah,
I'm sure DeFrank set up to go a second under, you know, at any given time. Same with Burton, right? I mean, both their stuff is way fast.
Nope.
Yeah,
Burton had to do it before the final. So,
yeah, that car, I don't think there's two. I don't know if there is a car in the country in D that can outrun that car. I would be really shocked to find, I mean, Randy Lynn's car is fast, but I don't think it's that fast as that thing. If he really wicked that car up and ran it, you know, no holds bar, I don't think there's a D car in the country that can run with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those blowed combos, right? It's like a 400 Pontiac or something, right?
Yeah. It's a full. I think they're 455s, aren't they?
That's it, 455. Yeah, where it's like.
Yeah.
You know, the crazy thing about this, not only did he do this, he wins the divisional, right? But then he goes to the spring fling, and he's the last car in pro the first day, just crushing them in the 38 car.
Yeah.
So,
I saw that. Oh, yeah. He's a good driver. I mean, he kind of, when he started running Division 6 a little bit, he kind of is the one that really blew the lid off Division 6 when he had basically a perfect score in the division. You know, I think he went out there and he won like 5 out of 6 points meets or something that year. He won the first world title. I mean, just, I think he had the world championship wrapped up in July, I think. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And good point bringing up the heads up in the semis, PJ, because you know how hard it is to get all amped up for a heads up, get the car iced down, oil all the changes, go up, get by that round, and then have to come back around and with a quick turnaround and run Jimmy DeFrank and go dead zero. I mean, man, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he had to – I'm sure here he's got this guy covered, right? You can tell he lays off the tree a little bit. He's 50. He probably, you know, chips it down a little bit so he can, you know, keep it at a manageable place. But then to have to be like, oh, now I've got to go right back to where I was because I've got DeFrank over here who's guaranteed to throw down a lap. I mean, you know, in all honesty, DeFrank's 2 thou away from being 37 total which in stock, again, is not – I don't think people understand. Like, they're like, oh, man, we bracket race and we do – I'm like, dude, the weather changes from first round to seventh round because you're 2 or 3 days apart.
Right.
We're not talking about, yeah. I'm not talking about first to seventh round at a bracket race where it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon to 10 o'clock at night. I understand it changes. I've bracket raced my whole life. But this is – we're talking about 3 days, across 3 days. If my guy's about to throw out 37 total, you know, pretty much, and he missed the tree at that point, right? He's like, man, I missed it there. But like you said, you know, Brad Burton's 15 total. Like, it's no big deal in the final.
All right.
Thank you for coming. This has been fun. We'll see you.
Well, and like you said, PJ, probably the more impressive thing to me, at least, is what he did the following, I believe it was, would that have been Wednesday? I mean, there was 580 entries in the Spring Fling Million, or the Spring Fling races around the million, the 330s, the 30,000 to win races. And I think he got down to, was it 5 or 10 cars out of 580? Pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he gets down to, you know, he runs all the no-box cars, right? Which, again, these are the best of the best.
That's right.
It's Justin Lamb, it's Phillips, it's all these guys out there that run that. I mean, these are the best of the best bottom bombers. I've raced that race.
It's the Castings. I mean, all the East Coast guys went out there.
Exactly. I mean, it's
Anthony Bartosi, Dan Fletcher.
I don't want to be in that group. And so for him to not only do that, but then he gets into where they mix him up and he gets down to 5, I mean, he's getting a paycheck all day long.
Yeah, he won a couple more rounds against the lay boxes. So.
Yeah, but he definitely not somebody I want to meet in a race. If I can avoid him, I'm not worried about heads up as much as I'm worried about running Brad Burton.
Luckily for us, PJ, he lives a long way from Columbus, Ohio.
Preach to that.
I don't know. They truck back to Bowling Green every once in a while. His dad was in Gainesville this year.
All right. Well, we'll have to deal with him someday. But for now, I think we'll be good. But congrats, Brad. Jimmy, also congrats. I mean, you did awesome all day. And to be, like PJ said, you know, darn near 40, less than 40 total in the final against the guy that just ran heads up, I'd be pretty happy with that lap. So, okay, well, real quick, let's just touch on the early season points champs discussion now. Now, obviously, there's a lot of things are going to change. You know, probably half the country hadn't even started racing yet. But, you know, we got a couple guys that have thrown up a pretty decent score early on. I know Rampy, you know, he's leading Superstock with 393, and he's got 5 divisionals, 1 national. I did not look at his races to see which were in and out of division and what the claims were. But, you know, almost 400 points this early with that amount of races, that's a pretty darn good start.
Yeah, it's okay. He's only got 2 more nationals till he starts improving on stuff. So, you know, so now he's throwing out his division races. So that total at a divisional level is going to start going up a lot slower now, maybe.
Yeah, so I know he had a couple finals. He's got a couple early rounds to throw out. So, not a bad start. I mean, Marion, he started off back-to-back wins, and he's in second with 360. He's also had some races that didn't go as well.
Yep.
You know, and Justin holding strong in number three, and he's got 320 with 5 races. He has not got off to as good a start as he has in some previous years, but I have a feeling he'll be hanging around at the end of the year.
Oh yeah.
And then in stock, you know, nobody's got quite that many. Slate's got 345, but through 7 races, so that's, you know, he's definitely got some improvement to go if he wants to stay up there. I think, you know, probably the 2 that have done the best in the spring is probably Jeff Longahaney and Jeff Harrington. They've got 330 with only 5 total races. And I know they both had some finals and some deep races, so they, you know, they're definitely not throwing that out. They probably have, you know, probably 2 of the best scores in stock to kind of get started with.
Yeah. You know, Cody's only back 19 points in the same amount of races, so not too bad.
Yeah, he's still in the running for sure. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. It's something that I always follow. And, you know, last couple of years has been really, really tight battles. I know stock for sure last year went right down to the wire with McClanahan winning. But there was 3 or 4 people that could have won it even the last couple of weeks. So it was definitely fun to watch.
Yeah.
All right, so Charlotte this weekend. yep. Four wide. Definitely one of my favorite tracks to go to. I know, PJ, you've raced there quite a bit as well. And since I was the big winner most recently, I will let you guys pick first.
Are we picking PJ, you're a super stock?
Since you're the guest, you pick the category and go for it first here.
All right. In stock, I'm going in stock, I'm actually going to go this is a tough one. I think I'm actually going to go Jeff Harrington.
Okay, that's a good pick.
Yeah,
good pick. He's been driving good there.
And I think that he's had a good car so far this year, and he's been able to get out more, he noticed. So, I think, Jeff Harrington for sure.
Good draw. I'm
Charlie.
Going to my homie out of Indy, Drew Skillman. Pulling double duty, Factory Showdown and Stock Eliminator. So, if he wins Factory Showdown, do I get a bonus on that, too?
For you,
yeah,
Charlie.
Text
sure.
In the mail. We'll send you contingency.
That's good.
Super stock, I'm going I'm going to go Joe Santangelo, man. I think this is probably his first race, but
yep.
He's bringing the late model Camaro out from what I saw. So I'm interested to see if that's true, that he's bringing the 87 out as opposed to the I believe he drives the 90 something model normally, but so I'm going Joe Santangelo.
Okay, Charlie.
I'm gonna go with the Kings of Charlotte, man. I'm gonna go with Brian Warner. Seems like he's always down to the semis of that race. Seems like him and his brother, they do really well there. They kind of own that place the last 7-8 years for the most part. As long as they're not running Jimmy Ronzello there, they kind of seem to go around. So,
I think that is also an excellent pick. All right, so down to me in stock. I'm going to go with Kenneth Stott.
Good job.
He is a tough racer. He hits the tree as good as anybody. And, if he can get the thing dialed in and have a little luck, I think he's got a real good shot anywhere he goes if you watch him. And for super stock, I'm gonna go a little bit outside the norm here. I'm gonna pick Tracy Robbins in the beautiful Corvette.
I see Jason Lyons running super stock this weekend.
Yes, he is. Looks like he's running his stalker in super stock. Must want to sleep in a little bit, not have to run stock.
Good for him.
Or maybe he has another car, but I guess we'll find out.
Time will tell. We'll know more Friday.
Okay, so let's get to the most important part of the show and what all of our fans have been waiting for. Let's talk to our good friend, PJ North, a little bit.
Man, I don't know if everybody's waiting for it, but I appreciate the introduction.
Well, I can look at the stats and see how long people listen. So
there you go.
Give me a call next week, and I'll let you know.
I don't know if I want that.
So, PJ, man, did you retire the Cuddy or what?
Nah, man. My wife's going to drive it this year. We got we just did some updates to it, just cosmetic stuff, man. But she's been driving it a bunch. She really enjoys it. And, we're hoping to it's a little bit faster. We found a few things that hopefully we can kind of try to get. It's been such a good car when she drives it. When I drive it, it's a hot pile of garbage. But she can make it run within 200ths of each other. I can't make it run within 5 or 6. So maybe it's my driving. But she really enjoys it. So we're going to all kind of race this year together, me, her dad. So it gives us the opportunity to each run a car. We did it last year at the Bowling Green Divisional. I ran Super Comp. She ran stock, and her dad ran Super Street. So we're going to do that some more. So we're excited about that.
Nice. Now, PJ, let's talk a little about something you just kind of alluded to. But, last couple of years you've been running. You had a beautiful, brand new Super Comp dragster that I believe you won in a raffle, right?
I did. Yeah, I wanted to keep this away from the government, but yeah, I won it in a raffle. I actually called my shot, but that story's kind of weird, but it's funny to tell. I was at the Spring Fling and I tried to get in the race. They didn't have any entries left, and so the cars were actually parked by our trailer. And I was like, well, y'all might as well leave one of those here because I'm going to take it home. You know, I'm trying to buy one at this point. And so the dude wins it, Mike Pascal. He ends up picking the race tech or whatever, and he's like, hey, I'm going to raffle it off. And I was like, all right, well, just let me know when you want me to come get it. Just trying to make the joke or whatever. And, you know, and he's like, well, I'm going to raffle it off. I said, okay, I'll take two tickets. So I got two tickets and, you know, whatever. Well, I ended up getting back from New York, and I had totally forgot about the entries. And I'm sitting on the couch. And I looked at my phone, and Amanda's like, oh, my God, did someone die? Because I'm, like, staring blankly at my phone. Facebook is blowing up. And I'm like, we just won a dragster. I was like, this is crazy. I don't even know how this is possible. So, sure enough, we had a buddy of ours bring it. I didn't even have to go get it. A buddy of ours was meeting us in Knoxville, so he brought it to us. And we picked it up in Knoxville, and then we ended up building – basically, it wasn't even a complete roller. It was chassis – and body. I still had to buy the burst panels. I had to buy a dash. But the guys at Race Tech, man, took great care of me. And that car ended up being – that's the first really new car that I ever had. I had a Race Tech dragster before. So, but it was a great car. I loved it. But as dragsters go, you know, you got to get rid of them or else they lose value. You know what I mean? They're not like door cars or super stockers. And so they don't hold as – the value doesn't hold well. So, you know, I was just trying to move on, and I really wanted to run super stock. Anyway, and I actually was trying to buy that Corvette, that red Corvette that's in Ohio, that Brian Merkel drives sometimes. And
yeah.
So I was trying to buy that, but he wanted a little too much money. And anyways, this Super Stocker came up for sale. I found it and was like, me and my father-in-law told me the same day we wanted to buy it. So I was like, all right, I really need to sell this dragster now. So yeah, now we're here, I guess.
All right, so
where'd that car come from?
The Super Stocker came out of San Antonio, Texas. The backstory on it is, so I get online, I'm looking on Racing Junk randomly. I sent it to my father-in-law. I was like, hey, look at this. This is a pretty good deal. That's, you know, brand new car, never ran. And he's like, hey, we need to call that guy today. And I was like, I was just half joking. We called the dude. He's like, hey, someone's already looking at it. It turned out the dude that was looking at it was Cody Phillips. Cody's got a Cobalt, and so when he found that Cobalt, he told the guy, hey, I'm not going to buy it, and the dude called me back, and I wore this dude out. I was like, hey, man, has anybody called? And then that's when I found out it was Cody. So the dude called me back finally. He's like, hey, you know, if you want – I was like, I'll send the money today. Just tell me where to wire it. So we sent him a down payment, and I think the dude realized he kind of messed up on price because he called us back like twice, was like, are you guys sure you're going to come get this? I was like, dude, I'm sure. I didn't got the money out of the bank. I'm coming to get this car.
So, yeah.
He's like, man, it's a long drive. I was like, I don't care if it's in California. I'm coming to get that car. So long story short, we end up driving, me, a buddy of mine, and my father-in-law. We left on Friday night. We got there Saturday afternoon. And I get off the freeway, and, I mean, I'm in the city. I'm like, there's no way. I was like, this dude's going to take us out to a race shop. I was like, there's no way. I mean, he lives in like a – I'm not talking about the suburbs. I'm talking about –
downtown.
I'm basically, right. So we get to his house, and I'm like, there's no way. There's just no way. And the dude rolls it out from behind his house. And I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? He's got a lean-to built onto his house. This dude hand does everything. I mean, everything is hand done. It's unbelievable. And so basically the guy just isn't a racer, but he likes to build cars. He built it based off the East Texas car. If you couldn't tell the difference between my car and Slate's, probably, like as far as that wise goes, you know, chassis wise. So it's really, it's a beautiful car. Everything on it's brand new. We got it here and then redid everything. Put all brand new sand tufts on it, Mosier brakes, all that good stuff. Brand new rear end. Quick Performance did a ring and pinion for me, specially built for it. Randy Daniels did the motor. Got brand new Pro Trans. So it's got the best of the best. It's going to be the nicest car I've ever owned, I hope. So we're excited.
Now, C-Modified, I think, is the planned class,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, like I said, man, you know, this is probably the most research I've ever done on the motor concept. You know, when I bought the Stalker, it was like, hey, how can I get in this class and what's the cheapest way to get in this class? I don't care about anything else. So with this, it was the opposite. Here was our budget, you know, based on what we sold the dragster for. You know, here's what we can do. Here's what we want to do. Let's kind of find that, you know, middle ground or whatever. We talked a few. The first person I called was Justin Lamb and was like, hey, man, can I get your motor builder's information? And his words, exact words were, no, I cannot give it to you. Okay. So I was kind of at square one, and we just kind of looked around and whatnot. But I talked to Justin. He gave me some insight. And, you know, I got insight from a lot of different people, just kind of talked around and, you know, tried to find out what was best for me. We wanted to make it fast. I didn't want to run a slower GT class. We didn't really want to fool around with fuel injection right now. We're just not quite there. And so, yeah, this modified motor popped up. A buddy of ours told us about it, and I had been looking around on comp websites because some other people gave me some insight about that, and that's how we ended up with this deal with the Randy Daniels one. It's a 305. Other than that, I don't know much about it. I know it's got aluminum rods. I know it's going to crank about 10-1. That's about all I know right now.
All right, so how close are we to the debut? What do you think?
I'm about 10 days out. I'm a week short of time to make Columbus, unfortunately. I think basically we have everything done. We took it to the chassis guy here in town, just to finish some of the stuff that we really couldn't do. You know, we're working. We bought brand new Santa front struts, right? Well, I don't know anything about strut front end, and I never had a strut front end. But I don't know anything about that. So we took it to him. He set that up and set some other stuff up. We had to have some different manufacturing stuff. Like the pedals were a little too close to the tunnel. So we wanted to make that change. We had to fix the steering wheel so it's a little more driver friendly. Again, this guy built it based on the rule book. I mean, we had Danny Estep come down and check it in for us, basically, you know, check out all the bars, make sure everything checked off. It passed tech before, you know, it did have a chassis cert on it before, but the guy never raced. So, you know, we got it as he finished the car, we had it recerted and everything. So we're about 10 days short, man. We got all, again, team race pack's been great. So I got a brand new IQ3 drag dash for it. Biondo, of course, always takes care of me. I got dual dial-in boards. I'm going to be able to dial that thing before I roll in the water box. That's how I like it. I got all that stuff, man. And Mosier took care of me on the brakes. And, you know, so it's gonna be a cool hot rod. But it's, like I said, about 10 days away. I'm going to hopefully I got new decals from Chase Huffman and Accelerated Graphics. So they're going to do I got a cool layout. We went with a simple paint scheme rather than, you know, something kind of crazy. I realized I couldn't afford what Justin Lamb had, so that's why I had to scale everything back. So Chase did some really cool graphics for me, you know, decals and some different things. So we went with a little different scheme than my other car. So we're pretty excited about that. But, yeah, man, it's a long road to get here. I've had this car now for, like, 6 months almost, I think, right at 6 months. So I thought it'd be ready to go, but they didn't build Rome in a day, so.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, I had a GT Super Stalker that we had raced for years and just converted it to a modified motor. And that took us quite a lot longer than we thought it would. So it's definitely a little different ball game. And, you know, it sounds like you got some really good stuff and you're working with the right guy. So I'm sure you'll do fine. But it was a bit of a learning curve for us. But it took a little while, but I definitely love modified. I like chasing, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that, man. I've never really had anything fast. As Chuck knows, man, my Stalker was like, I couldn't even run the index the first time I ran, and it didn't get much faster. So, you know, I'm interested in that part of it to be the faster car because my dragster really wasn't that fast. It was a 480 car, so, you know, now guys are going 440. Even my bracket Chevelle is not fast. So this will definitely be a change. I would think that the majority of the racing for me will be in front of me, which will be a cool learning curve.
What's the index in CMOD now?
950.
Okay.
So I'm interested. To see. We hope to go about I would venture to guess we'll probably go somewhere between, you know, 90s, 890s is probably competitively where we'll be. And then, you know, once I get that first gold record, I'm hoping to run Indy and just blow the index out. That's my goal. Nothing like being that guy, right?
Well, if you had the budget, I'm sure Randy Daniels could build you a motor that would make that happen, because he's got some pretty smash. Him and his dad have some pretty fast small blocks out there, so I think you're in good shape.
His comp stuff flies.
Okay, so let's talk a little about that gold record. So for those of you who don't know, and I'll let PJ explain a little bit, but PJ has been, you know, in music as long as I've known him. I know that you've done some stuff more in the kind of rap genre and have more recently moved to more of a, you know, moved to Nashville, and you're, I think, more focused on more of a country style currently. But I know you've written songs. I don't know exactly how many, you know, songs you published and things like that. Maybe you could fill us in some of that. But I guess, you know, I think one of the coolest things about this podcast, and I would also agree the coolest things about, you know, Stock Superstock and drag racing in general, is just the people that you meet at the racetrack. You know, this sport is not the cheapest thing to do. It's not the easiest thing to do. And I've felt over the years, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I've met some really interesting, smart people over the years. And that's probably the coolest thing. And I think, you know, I definitely have not met too many people that, you know, have the talent to be able to sing, you know, and write at the level that you do. So just another, you know, interesting person that I've met drag racing.
You know, man,
yeah, I mean,
it's crazy. Go ahead, Chuck. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're all right. I was going to agree with Aaron. You know, I've met everything from guys that, you know, run a garbage truck to, you know, Scott McClay, who's a rocket scientist. You know, I mean, that's the crazy thing about drag racing is there's, you know, you've met just about anybody that's ever done any job or owned any business. I mean, you know, guys like, you know, Steve Kent and Roger Brogdon that have run these businesses, and then other guys that, you know, like Ambrose and Huber, those guys that worked at Ford's for 30 years. I mean, it's crazy the amount of people that just come to drag racing from all different aspects, you know, like, you know, Pete, you're the singer. I remember when I first met you, you were on the Super Street Chevy 2, you know. So,
you know, it's been the weird thing for me, man, is the majority of people in this town and the group that I hang out with and I, you know, commiserate with, we're all of us have different goals, but the majority of my friends are musicians full time. You know, when I moved here, I quit my job. I was a IT project manager for a big consulting firm in Ohio. I worked in financial services. So, you know, I went from, you know, making really good money to moving here to not having the job. And, you know, Amanda, who I moved here to be a musician and to be with her. So, it worked out, you know, we had a good, you know, at first, but I ran out of money and was like, I got to get a job. So I went back to IT project management, and I've been doing that since basically I moved back here. And so I'm an IT project manager by day. I work, you know, 40 to 50 hours there minimum a week, and then I have to do the music thing afterwards, right? So it really limits me to what I'm doing, but I'm trying to do everything. And I, you know, sometimes people are like, well, you're a jack of all trades, but a master of none. But I'm like, I kind of prefer it that way. Like, I just like to have my hand in a little bit of everything, you know, even the announcing deal. You know, I don't love announcing. I got the want to announce because I love pro wrestling, and I'm interested in the announcing part of that. So, like, that's kind of how I got into the drag racing announcing, and I still do that on, you know, will do that on the side and whatnot. But I just kind of keep my hand in everything, and between racing and music and all that stuff, I wouldn't have ever moved to Nashville if it wasn't for the music, but I also wouldn't have made it that far if it wasn't for the racing. So it's pretty crazy to kind of have my hand in everything and be, I call it multifaceted, but you know, some people might call it crazy. Just depends on who you ask, I suppose.
Now, for some of the listeners that don't know much about your music, you know, how many songs have you written? You know, what kind of, you know, where can they find them? You know, tell us a little about that.
You know, so it depends on how long you've known me or whatnot. You know, I grew up on country music first and foremost. That's, I always wanted to be a performer regardless, but I couldn't sing a lick growing up. So when I started really making my own music It was a lot of hip hop stuff. I was very good at that. You know, that's not everybody's groove, but I still wanted to write all types of genres. So as I got older, you know, I was still doing the hip hop thing, but then I started to lean towards songwriting and doing a lot of the country stuff. I was doing some pop stuff for other people too and whatnot. So now, you know, again, I built my fan base on this. I say it's on hip hop, but in reality, the only songs that people were really, really listening to were the racing songs, man. So the racing community, they listen to everything the same way I do, right? I have a very wide range of musical tastes. So when I moved here, I'm still focused on country music, but I still do a little bit of hip hop stuff too, but I do a lot of the pop stuff as well. We kind of, you know, move around. Me personally, my focus is just making the best music that I want to make. It's hard to put it in a genre, but if I had to, I'd call it pop country. And of course, they can find it on iTunes and Amazon and Google Play and Spotify. You can look me up as PJ North again. And that's, we mentioned about the notes and the thing. The reason for two names are when I left college, I was rapping and I was doing a lot of that stuff. And, you know, the big thing at that point when I was getting into job search was, well, hey, you know, they can Google you or they can find you and whatnot. And I was like, well, I don't really want them to Google me and find LA to Paris, you know, out there on the internet. And being like, hey, why is our new IT project manager getting groped in the back of a taxi? so the whole thing was, that's where the second name kind of came from. And as I said, I'm a huge pro wrestling fan. When I was a kid, every creator wrestler I made on video games was PJ North. So it's always been my, like, you know, my AKA or whatever. My
alter ego.
Exactly. So PJ North is really just like a heightened version of myself. If it could be any more heightened, that's what I would say it is. So you can look up PJ North. You can visit thepjnorth.com. I'm doing a new YouTube channel for racing specific stuff. It's not racing specific songs, just that, but it is that as well. Due to some things online and just the way that kind of how marketing is working and how the cost of licensing and different things have gone up, all my racing songs are free now on my website and on YouTube. So you can go to my racing channel, PJ North Racing, or you can go to my personal channel, just youtube.com/, you know, the PJ North, and check out all that stuff. I am doing a new vlog, which is a really cool thing. I've been getting into I've seen some new YouTube stuff, so I'm trying to get into that, and I'm trying to give another avenue for my sponsors and people that have supported me and whatnot, and I'm also trying to find a new way to get my music out there. So I've found that people really enjoy watching racing videos online. You know, that street race channel has taken off. It's been a big thing. All of my most watched videos involve race cars. So, you know, why not continue to play into that, right? It's not – I don't want to call it pandering because I'm still a racer, right, at heart. I race all the time, race more than I play music, honestly. So for me, this is a cool new way that I'm doing that, and I'm going to showcase some new songs on there, demos that I've done. I'm calling it like a demo showcase on there. So I'm pretty excited about that stuff too. So there's kind of any way that you can find anybody, you can find me, just search PJ North.
Very cool. Now, how often, PJ, are you, you know, doing live performances now that you've moved down to Nashville? Because, you know, if none of your racers have seen PJ in some sort of live capacity, I would definitely check that out because it's you definitely take it to another level.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, that's always been my go-to, I think, is the live show is what's kept me to be able to do it as long as I have. If it wasn't for my live show, I probably wouldn't be doing it still. I think that's what kind of kept people captivated. And it's no different from hip-hop to country music. My live show is still wild and all that stuff. I'm playing less right now because we're kind of in a transitional phase of we've released a lot of new music, and so we're trying to book newer venues where we can make money at it, basically. So I've played a lot less, but in town I'm playing a little differently. I play writer's rounds around town more, and basically writer's rounds are just you go out and you play songs and you tell the story behind the song, how it was written, and that's how a lot of people get, not necessarily get found, but that's how you meet other writers. That's how you meet different people and whatnot, and so that's one of the cool new things I'm doing. It's not the most interesting thing to see me play guitar live because I'm not that great as far as guitar-wise goes, but the show is still interesting because I think that I bring a little bit different dynamic as opposed to some of the other writers. You know, everybody's got their own flavors. So I'm playing, like I said, not as much as I used to, but I'm going to be playing more than I used to in the coming months, hopefully.
Now, you know, there's got to be, you know, I don't know anything about the music industry necessarily, but, you know, there's got to be hundreds, if not thousands of people living in Nashville, you know, trying to, you know, make it, right? I mean, that's got to be really tough, right?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, it's crazy, is it's everyone. Everyone is at least either tried or is trying or has some type of interest in the business. And, you know, just in my group alone, you know, we have a group squad chat thing, and that, you know, we're all trying to be artists, right? There's 20 of us, basically, more or less, give or take, and we're all trying to do it. And we're all at different levels in our career, right? Where I'm on, like, the last leg, like, trying to figure it out. Like, if it doesn't work out, I guess I'm really going to have to keep my day job, right? Where I've got friends that are 23 years old who are, like, it's gung-ho now, right? They've got all the time in the world to make it. I've got other fans who are on the, you know, other friends that are on the cusp of making it and different things like that. So it's really crazy to see just the different phases of life that we're all in and how we take it in. But that's the best part about Nashville, right? You know, in Columbus, I think that the hard thing for me was I had played every venue in Ohio that you can play as an unsigned artist. You know, Newport Music Hall, A&R Bar, The Basement. I've played in Cleveland at the House of Blues. We've played in Cincinnati. Anywhere in Ohio that you could play, we've played that. And whereas here, it's a whole new thing because at that point in Columbus, everybody's like, oh, yeah, I do music. But they don't really do music, right? Whereas in here in town, if you do music, that's what you do. So it's the creative process here is really cool because it lends itself to just a whole different animal, right? You're writing. I mean, I probably write three times a week, whereas my friends write three times a day. So it's a definitely a different animal, but it's definitely a cool change up on it. It's not a bad thing by any stretch, but it is a lot of people trying to make it, man. You know, a lot of bartenders, a lot of waiters. Not many of us are IT project managers full time like I am.
Probably not.
Yeah, everybody's got their own thing, but yeah, it's pretty crazy for sure. And the town's growing at like 100 people a day, so it's not getting any smaller, man. It's just more and more people doing the same thing.
Well, the IT project manager probably pays a little better than a bartender, so I think
You know, I'm debating. My buddy in Boston just told me how much money he's going to make as a waiter, and I was like, I think that's almost more than I make. Like, maybe I need to figure this out.
Well, I lived in Boston for 2 years, and everything is really expensive there, so you can make money doing anything in Boston.
Yeah, he's out there. He works at, like, Ocean Prime or whatever, and it's he was telling me about it, and I was just like, yeah, it sounds like I can't afford to live there either. So,
yeah, in Boston, happy hour is illegal.
Oh, okay.
Because that would suggest more drinking. So what that means is everything's just more expensive all the time.
That's great.
But, yeah, another cool city. Great to live there for 2 years, not somewhere I'd want to live forever.
Right.
Well, cool. So it sounds like you got, you know, kind of got it going on in the music industry. One other thing, I guess, you know, when I had talked to you off air one time recently, you had kind of said that really you had hoped to make it more as a writer. That's really what you enjoy the most. Is that still kind of the thing?
Yeah, man, I think the cool thing about being a writer in town is that, like I said, I'm trying to get a different, you know, I'm just trying to get a lot of different genres. Country music is such a broad stretch, right? Everybody's like, oh, that's not country, or this is country, or whatever it may be. But in reality, we're all just trying to make good music, right? And so the cool thing about in town is we get to write a lot of different styles all the time. And so that's what I really enjoy. Of course, I love performing the most, you know, and so that's – I still want to do that. But if I could make it as a writer, I mean, that would be the ultimate too, man. And I've had a couple songs cut by some friends of mine, which is the coolest thing ever, man. To hear people sing a song that you wrote is one of the most rewarding feelings that I've had. You know, it comes pretty close to winning a big race. You know, for me, it's one and the same, right? It's a different adrenaline, and to see people enjoy that song is an even cooler moment for me. So, you know, like I said, I'm just trying to take anything I can do in the music business that'll get me out of the job I'm in currently. That's what I'm going for, whatever that may be.
Now let me ask you: so if you could get signed per se, do you think you'd still have time to race?
You know, we've talked about that, right? And that's been – my friends are always constantly telling me, like, hey, you need to – you know, like, sometimes they're always, they give me the thing of you need to do this or, you know, you got to be out here more. We got to see you out more and whatnot and different things like that. And it's hard for me. I think I'd still be able to race. I think it'd be a lot less, right? But I think I'd have to be on that D2 schedule.
because, you know, they're done by March, and then they don't start until October. So I'd be on that D2 schedule. But it's definitely possible. I don't think that it's, you know, it wouldn't end my racing career by any stretch. Especially, you know, we last year we put together a pitch. I put together a song. I put together a pitch for concert series and a theme song for NHRA. We put together a whole platform for them. And basically we're like, hey, look, let's do this to give your fans another fan fest thing, right? We'll bring up different drivers each week. I have enough friends that are pros that can be like, hey, can you guys come and sing karaoke on this one song? We're going to play Friday night. We're going to play an hour and a half, right? And basically this was going to be at no cost to the NHRA. And I was like, this is the best thing for me, right? Not only do I get to race, but I'm going to get to play shows every weekend that I race. And it's a win-win situation, right? Of course, it's a win-win situation in my mind.
yeah, right.
You know, of course, you know, to each their own. But it's one of those things that, like I said, if I could turn it into that, I definitely would. You know, if I'm still open to that, too. And I get a lot of people that reach out to me, hey, man, we'd love to have you play at this race or whatever. Last year we played at that junior race and Tennessee, which was great. That was a cool deal for us. We played at the PDRA banquet, which was amazing. We've played so many. We played Columbus 2 years ago.
Yep, I remember that.
You know, and so we've done a lot of different stuff. Yeah, and so it's really cool for us, man, to be able to do different things. And that's I hope to be able to still combine. And I think, you know, to give sponsors and to give music industry, you know, both sides. You know, Big Machine's main guy is a huge race car fan. Like, him and Ray Evernham go way back. Their friend, he sponsors Courtney Force when she was driving the funny car. So, like, Big Machine, that guy's a – and I'm like, hey, let's chat. What car do you want to drive? I've got three of them. You can take one if you want to. I'll let you run the Super Soccer before I do, if that's what it takes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So
we're always looking for an avenue. But to answer the question, long story short, like I said, I hope it doesn't take away from racing, but I got a lot of years to race. I don't know that I got a lot of years to look this young. I'll never be as young as I am right now, I suppose.
A lot of tears to that.
Charlie, when I talked to you this morning, you were feeling real young, weren't you?
No, I was feeling like shit. I still am feeling like crap. Over the weekend, I was working at some equipment. We got some old equipment that were too cheap to buy new, so we just repair it. And, man, I messed up my back. I don't know what I did. I fixed this unit about 15 years ago, rebuilt it. And I don't remember it being this rough on me. So, like, I literally woke up the next morning and, like, I couldn't move. I mean, I'm in my mid-30s, and it was like, man, this is not cool. But it's gotten better the last few days. We got our first combo race this weekend. It looks like it might rain on Saturday, so Sunday.
Are you guys having the Great Lakes deal again?
Yeah. Mike Delahanty and Brad, myself, and a bunch of other guys have been putting that on the last couple of years, and they're getting anywhere from 40 to 50 cars, so.
You know,
it's nice for a lot of the older guys that don't get out and run the tour like they used to.
I agree completely, man. I think it's great for the sport. I think I talked to Brad. I was like, that's, you know, continue to do that stuff, man. Don't, you know, that stuff is, it may not seem like a lot to guys from the outside, you know, but, man, that's a huge, huge deal. I love the Buckeye Stocks thing. I was doing that, you know, a couple different times when I was up there. I used to run that series. It's a great deal, and, you know, we need more stuff like that. So, you know, I can't ever race your guys' deal, but I'm appreciative that you guys have it, though.
Yeah, that's, you know, there's a couple, you know, the guys down at Bowling Green, they run one, and then the guys at the Valley, and Ross's deal, and ours. So it just gives guys that can't afford to take 3-4 days off to run a points meet or a national event, you know, they can go up and run. A lot of our guys, if we do a double, they'll only run one day and then they'll go back home, a lot of them. So.
Yeah, we love love the combo here at Bowling Green, man. It's one of our favorite deals. You know, they still run heads up here, which a lot of a lot of series don't.
Yeah, Dallas he's been a big stock, super stock supporter, and his son Clay was too when he was still around. So those guys, that they've been running combo there since the beginning of time, I think.
Yeah, we love it. So it's a good deal, like I said. We're big on that, man. I'm happy. Like, you know, I tell everybody when we have this conversation, I don't want to be the only young person that runs stock and super stock, right? And I'm not saying I'm the answer by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, I like to think that my racing, you know, my songs and stuff, and bringing some new light to stock and super stock gives interest to some of those, you know, I'm not, again, even if I bring two or three people to it, I feel like I've done my part, you know, for, and it's the same thing with your guys' thing, man. Like, not everybody can run the NHR. They're not quite there yet, right? But they can run your guys' series, or they can run the Buckeye, you know, all those type of things. And it's, it gives them an opportunity to run the class, and it's a really cool deal. And, you know, we're all trying to do our part to keep the class alive, right?
Yeah. And there's a lot of guys that stepped up, you know, because a lot of guys ran a lot of IHRA for years, because that was kind of the, before all the combo series had started. And when that kind of went defunct here, you know, really 4 or 5 years ago, these combo races really started to pick up, and they kind of picked up the slack for what that series was.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I know you guys have the Great Lakes race this weekend, and then the Buckeye Series is in Columbus this weekend.
Yep.
So, you know, two good options to race here in the Midwest. I will say I looked at the weather, both locations, and me and PJ, we talked about this while we're waiting for Charlie to jump on, but I think looking at Columbus weather, the 10-day, I think there's like one day that's sunny in the next 10, one or two days, so not looking real good for that, but hopefully weather changes and we're able to get some racing in this weekend and then the following weekend for the D3 opener at Trails Raceway.
Most yeah, definitely. It's time, man. It's time to start hitting it hard for us. I mean, what do we got? We got Columbus, then basically, what, 10 days off in Norwalk, then Chicago Nationals, open in Bowling Green. What else we got? Norwalk Nationals, something else in June, isn't there?
Bristol and Norwalk are in June.
Yeah.
On the East Coast, Division One really gets going here towards the end of May and June. They have a few races as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's D3 and D1 kind of come alive. I think D5 starts a little later this year.
Yeah, I think they go to Vandermeer as their first race, and then they really don't get started till really the end of July. They think that the double in Topeka is there, other than if you want to go to Colorado. You get the double in Topeka, and then basically the week after that, I think, is Brainerd, followed by the Brainerd National Event, you know, and then Indy, and then back to Earlville. So the Division 5 guys, I mean, they're basically racing 5 out of 7 weekends if they go to Indy.
Yeah, and then, you know, like PJ alluded to earlier, I mean, D2 and D4 have kind of, they're about ready for their summer break to some extent. So be kind of interesting kind of seeing what's going on in the next few months.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
All right. Well, you know, PJ, we really appreciate you jumping on tonight. We also really appreciate you doing a quick kind of intro song for us that we've been using the last few weeks. And you did that on a very, very short notice and obviously at a very, very low cost. So we do appreciate that as well.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me today. And again, just, you know, thank you for having me, and thanks for letting me do the intro for you guys. And I'm glad that people listen to my music and are supportive, and they think, you know, I'm the voice of the podcast intro, I guess. You know, I'm happy to do it. And so, like I said, thanks everybody out there, and you can check me out again, thepjnorth.com. There's my shameless self-promotion. Don't forget to check out my YouTube channel, PJ North Racing. You can check that out. Again, my new vlog will be out very soon. You can check that out. Again, thank you guys for having me.
All right. Well, thanks, PJ. And Charlie, take it easy. We got to get you ready for race season. No more working on farm equipment.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Sure, Patrick will take it over. We're good to go.
All
right. Well, we'll see if Patrick listens this week, because I'll get a text. If not, if I don't get a text, he didn't listen. So.
Patty's a full-time polisher, man. He's polishing lug nuts and wheel inserts and decal on the red car. He's got all kinds of free time for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I am excited to see Patty in the red car this year. And
I am too.
I think he'll like it, and it should be a lot of fun.
If nothing else, at least the car will be clean all the time.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So, all right, well, thanks, guys, and thanks, PJ, once again. And we will definitely be following you on social media and other Drag Race Central as you debut your new modified car. So, and if you need any help, I know a little bit about it, so I will try to help you if I can.
I appreciate you guys. Thanks, man.
All right, see you, PJ. Thanks.
And that concludes the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Please make sure to like and follow the Facebook page so that you get all of the latest Class Racing Podcast news. Also, make sure to follow us wherever your podcast source is. And lastly, don't forget to tell your friends.